Fasten your chin strap and get ready for the snuff. The Eric Ainge Show with Brian Rice is ready to go. Sports Animals VFL QB is ready to give you the insight and analysis that no one else in Tennessee radio can. Get in Eric's headset by calling 656-9900. 656-9900. The Eric Ainge Show with Brian Rice is headed your way right now.
Hour number two of the EA Show coming at you live from the Budweiser Studios of Cumulus Broadcasting. Appreciate everyone listening to us, no matter where you're listening from, streaming us from anywhere, podcasting later. Appreciate all the ears that are being given to the Eric Ainge Show on the Sports Animal.
Always.
Each and every day.
656-9900 if you want to join us here on the EA Show. We talk Tennessee hoops in hour number one. More of that coming up. Trey Smith was named the Jason Witten Collegiate Man of the Year Award recipient yesterday.
And what is that? What is the Jason Witten Man of the Year?
It's presented annually to the Division I college football player who has demonstrated a record of leadership by exhibiting exceptional courage, integrity, and sportsmanship both on and off the field.
So, courage, give me the other tag words, integrity,
sportsmanship. He was one of three nominees. He is the first underclassman to ever, or first non-senior to ever win the award. The other two finalists were
this is based on last year.
Yes, the other finalists were Air Force senior quarterback Isaiah Sanders and USC senior wide receiver Michael Pittman.
So this is cool, man. I think this is why Trey Smith is so liked. I mean, I personally can think of a few different times. I guess he's in some sort of sport management type of what do you call the things you go to college for? Major. Yeah. Woo. Let's be a sports dog guy someday. They at the Big Kahuna Wing Festival a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. Trey was out there with a bunch of different guys on the team, and he was helping out with the deal and the sport management people. You know the guy.
Yeah.
Was out there. Anyway, Trey was, it was his birthday, and he was taking pictures with the kids and doing his thing and like what you would want all the Tennessee football players to be like. Like, I remember being that guy for kids and doing all that and like loving it. Well, now I have children watching the guys that do it the right way. I just love it, and I respect it, and I'm glad that I was good at doing that when I was there and afterwards, because it just means the world to them. And then I had my son's Boy Scout troop. We took him over to do a little play on the indoor facility and get a tour of the complex and, hey, VFL perks.
Yeah.
Well, Trey Smith and Jarrett Garantano came to hang out with the kids and throw the football around. And Trey would pick, you know, was picking kids up, and they were like, oh my God. Like, I mean, cause
he's a massive human being.
So, so massive that it's like, it's fun for the kids just to look at him.
Yeah.
Let alone like get to interact with him or anything else. You know, now he's got the cowboy hat swag. He collects thousands of coats for whatever it is that he does. I don't remember the details of it, but man, the guy in his speech, for crying out loud, mentioned his late mother and how she would have wanted him to graduate from UT and fulfill his commitment.
Yeah.
And you're just sitting there like, oh, come on. Like, I mean, I'm not crying. You're crying. I have allergies and I have something in both of my eyes. That's what's happening right now while Trey Smith is talking. I just love the kid to death. This is cool that he won this.
So that was announced last night. Also this, Clemson and Georgia are going to open the 2021 season in Charlotte. This was announced, and it continues a pairing of the two schools that will include, I believe it's six matchups between now and 2030. They are going to match up as well in the Chick-fil-A kickoff game in 2024, but this will be in what was formerly known as the Belt College kickoff. Saturday, September 4th, 2021, new title sponsor on the way since Belk backed out of that game and the Belk Bowl. Kirby Smart said this is a great opportunity to schedule a national non-conference game with a top-level opponent. Playing a regular season game in Charlotte will give our fans the opportunity for a completely new experience in a great city and top-level stadium.
We ain't scared, too. Good for you, Kirby.
Well, I think this, here's the thing on this. One of the reasons why Georgia is not scheduled more difficultly out of conference until the last few years is they have a Power 5 opponent the last weekend of the season. One of the reasons why Clemson had not done it before their most recent series against Texas A&M was because they have a major Power 5 opponent the last weekend of the regular season in South Carolina. I think Clemson and Georgia going out and starting to sign these other deals is just as indicative of they don't think that their in-state opponent is helping them in their non-conference scheduling anymore. And in a model, and we've talked about it before, in a model where your non-conference schedule is going to go to one major Power 5 team, one Group of 5 team, and then two cupcakes, they're treating their ACC, SEC opponent
more like a Group of 5 game?
More like a Group of 5 game. But, why, I mean, that's why, okay, I say Tennessee and Memphis should play every year, because if you're going to have to play a Group of 5 school, you might as well play somebody who's going to play you home and home, and it's just done.
Georgia Tech, I mean, I know they're from the ACC, but unfortunately, there's 20 or 30 Group of 5 teams. No, there's 20 Group of 5 teams that are better than them right now.
Yeah, and they're in the middle of a rebuild, but yeah, right now.
But right now, it's if you're playing UCF or USF, I mean, there's 5 schools in Florida. You just met, you know, Memphis, Cincinnati. I mean, there's a whole Air Force, BYU. I mean, I could go on. And I'm not even good about naming Group of 5 schools, and I can name 10 or 15 just off the top of my head that are better than Georgia Tech.
Right now, Boise, Memphis.
Yeah, I mean, I have a hard time giving them any credit for doing it. You know, like South Carolina, yeah, they stunk last year, but they've had, I mean, they're not too far removed from Spurrier's 11 win seasons. Yeah. They've been a good team. I mean, heck, they beat Georgia last year.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, that's
true.
Even in a terrible year there. So South Carolina, I mean, Clemson should still get credit for having to play the Gamecocks every year at the end of the year.
Yeah.
That's a different program. I know maybe last year it wasn't, but you can't go every single year to year. In the last decade, in the last 7 years of Clemson, you know, on the come up, South Carolina has been a tough game for a lot of teams, and they deserve credit for playing them.
Yeah. And I'm not taking credit away from them, certainly.
It's like Florida State. I mean, Florida should get credit for playing Florida State every year. I know that in the last 5 years it's not been, they've not been good. They've been really bad, actually.
Yep.
But Norvell ought to be able to get them back to a place where that's a legitimate win for Florida every single year. They ought to be ending their season with and they had to play Florida State. Man, they just barely got them. Florida State's a 10-win ACC team and going to a good bowl game. I mean, that's what that should be. So it's really Georgia Tech's the only other one in the league that you look at and you just go, meh. I like Clemson, Georgia,
Kentucky,
too.
Kentucky, Louisville, I think, is
okay,
one,
yeah,
too.
Okay, yeah. Kentucky, no, that's fair. That's fair for sure.
But, yeah, this is a good matchup.
Louisville,
a
Group of 5 team.
No.
They're ACC
team
now. They're
in the ACC,
now,
yeah.
But they're better than Georgia Tech.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, significantly.
They're certainly
And on the come up. I'm glad Georgia's scheduling Clemson.
Here's what Georgia's schedule looks like in future years. Now, this coming year, it's not great. Virginia, I mean, it's another Power 5 team.
They were ranked.
Yeah. They open up in a Chick-fil-A game. 2021 is Clemson, UAB, Charleston Southern, and at Georgia Tech. 2022, they'll open up in a Chick-fil-A kickoff game against Oregon.
Nice.
Then they play Samford and Kent State. 2023, at Oklahoma and at Georgia Tech.
Wow. So they got Clemson, Oregon, and Oklahoma. That is 3 of your top 6 teams.
Now, you never know how it's going to look in 2023, 2024.
No, but when they're being scheduled, that's 3 of the top, call it 10 teams in the country.
2024 is Clemson at the Chick-fil-A kickoff game, Tennessee Tech, UMass, and Georgia Tech. 2025 at UCLA, Austin Peay, Charlotte, and at Georgia Tech. 2026 will be UCLA and Georgia Tech at home. 2027 at Florida State and at Georgia Tech. They also have Texas in 2028 and 2029, back to Clemson in 2030, and at Ohio State in 2031. Their 2031 schedule. Now,
2031.
It's 11 years from now, so who knows what it'll even look
like. Is Kirby Smart still the coach at Georgia?
No.
Probably not. No. Isn't that sad?
Years, no.
I know, but isn't that sad, though, that like it's the safe bet to say that a guy that's finished with the number one recruiting class 3 years in a row and a top five team 3 years in a row who's only been there for 4 years, like, to if he can't do it, can anybody?
Now, come back to me in 11 years and call me wrong, but I'll be stunned if this schedule plays out at Ohio State and Oklahoma at home.
Jeez.
I'm going to say they're not going to play those two teams in the first 3 weeks of the season. Just a guess. Anyway, Georgia and Clemson. I like it because it's a regional matchup.
Cowabunga, man.
And hey, give Georgia an extra L. I don't
care. Rock and roll.
It's the Hurricane Show, 656-9900 if you want to join us on FM 99.1, The Sports Animal.
If you want to join Brian Rice and myself, Eric Gaines, on the Eric Gaines Show on the Sports Animal.
Coming up later this hour, you'll have a chance to win two tickets to see the Foo Fighters at Thompson Bowling Arena on April 20th. Not right now, but later this hour.
Soon?
Before this hour is up, we will give away tickets to see the Foo Fighters.
Oh, man, so oysters are a big deal in Orange Beach, I guess.
Yeah.
I love oysters.
That's so you fun. Think that's where you're going on vacation?
I don't know exactly. It's whatever the nice place in the Alabama Gulf is.
That's pretty much it. Orange Beach or Gulf Shores. They're right there together. All right. The NCAA has come out with a proposal out of the transfer working group that would explore a concept allowing all athletes in all sports to transfer and play immediately one time during the course of their college careers. Of course, we mentioned this yesterday. The ACC came out in support of it. The Big Ten last week came out in support of it. So the transfer working group announced the plan that they have come up with. After initially saying that they would not vote on anything this calendar year, now they may vote on it before April.
Yikes.
And part of that is because there was a 500% increase in waiver requests last year, and the NCAA, frankly, doesn't have time to process them all. They don't have the staff for it because there was a 500% increase because people are throwing anything at the wall. From the NCAA's release, there would be four conditions on being able to transfer without penalty. I only see one of these as problematic. Number one, receive a transfer release from their previous school. That's the one that we're going to have to talk about. Number two is leave their previous school academically eligible.
Yep, I think that's, you got to leave it in good academic standing. You can't be screwing the school you were at because you didn't take care of business and then go get eligibility to go do it somewhere else.
Number three, maintain their academic progress at the new school. They have to come in and their credits have to transfer. Number four, leave under no disciplinary suspension.
I don't have any problem with that.
I don't either.
If you're not taking care of business, but the two through four are, listen, if you are not holding up your end of the bargain and therefore you think you should be able to transfer and go somewhere else with no penalty, no, that's not how it is. You're going to have penalty because you're not going to be able to, you can't not take care of business on your end, have a self-inflicted problem, and then wonder why you don't get an immediate release to go play. Number one's weird to me, though, because that's not on the kid.
Number one is in response to something that Mark Richt brought up yesterday on Twitter, which is coaches going and pillaging other people's rosters.
Okay, how's that going to happen?
Coaches contacting players on teams and saying, hey, if you're interested in moving, you can come to our school because we have a spot for you.
But they can't do that unless they're in the portal, correct?
Correct.
See, I don't think logistically that ends up happening because I don't think that coaches are going to be able to call players.
The rules say that they can't, but I think it happens right now. See, if you put yourself in the portal, you can come to X school. I think that's absolutely happening right now, and I think it is a concern. Rather than doing this and putting it in the hands of coaches and athletic directors that can be petty at times, I think you just hammer a couple of schools that are caught tampering.
Yeah, if you get caught calling or texting or DMing a player, direct messaging a player on social media, and they're not in the portal, and you're on another team, another team's in staff member, period. I don't care. It doesn't have to be the head coach. Right. If you're an employee of the University of Georgia, and you contact a player at the University of Tennessee, and that player was like, let's say in this situation, before Cade Mays ever puts his name in the portal, let's say Jeremy Pruitt or T. Martin or someone was contacting Cade Mays saying, you know, you could always come here. You could always come here. If that was happening, then that's not a slap on the wrist.
No, it should be a major penalty.
Major, major penalty.
That's an easy way to figure this out. That's an easy way.
So, and you know, Ralph mentioned something yesterday when we were talking to him.
Yeah.
About this kind of thing anyway. About
happens all the time in that
taking
sport.
Players.
Happens all the time.
See, I don't know how frequent that it happens in football. I don't think it's that relevant in football. Just there's so many players that you're dealing with.
I think the grad transfer market is where it's happening in football right now.
I would agree with that.
And there are coaches at smaller schools that are against that. They're not going to stand in the way of a kid going because it's going to crush them on the recruiting trail. Because you know who's susceptible to being crushed on the recruiting trail? It's the small schools, because an offer from Middle Tennessee State and an offer from UAB are not that different like an offer from Tennessee and Alabama would be. You don't have the metrics to put up. So if, let's say, and they don't, but let's say an MTSU had a reputation as a school who got mad and didn't help their kids as grad transfers and kind of messed with their schedules to make sure they couldn't be grad transfers, that's going to hurt them in recruiting a lot more than most other things at that level. And there are coaches at some schools. I haven't heard it happen in Conference USA where those two schools are, but I have heard it happen in the MAC where they're not letting their kids take one session of summer school because they don't want them to be able to graduate in 3 years. They want them to graduate in three and a half.
Come on, man.
They want them to graduate in 3.5 years. But not 3 years.
I'm not saying that I'm not debunking what you're saying.
No,
I'm saying the conceptually doing that as a grown freaking man.
It's abhorrent.
Like you're a loser. If you're doing that stuff, you're a loser, man, and you're probably not winning at a high level. This to me is again, where if you're just joining us, reset it for everybody, Brian. We're talking about the transfer rule and
the NCAA working group on transfers announced yesterday that they are exploring
the Big Ten's original proposal
with some exceptions, including receiving a transfer release from their previous school.
I don't love that.
They got rid of the release 2 years ago when they put in the portal.
Didn't Dooley do that?
Dooley told Aaron Douglas that he couldn't transfer anywhere within 200 miles or 300 miles of the Tennessee campus.
RIP, man. Sorry, I get emotional whenever that he gets brought up. All right, give me another example. There's a kid from Michigan, I think, right?
About
Aaron Douglas.
A kid from Michigan
that
wanted to transfer because his grandfather was dying, and the rule says you have to be within 100 miles of home to get that waiver, and he was like 103. Same thing happened to a kid that was transferring to Virginia Tech. He was like 6 miles away.
What was that kid's name? DeAnthony?
Oh, DeAnthony Arnett. He went to Michigan State from Tennessee.
That guy. Yeah. That's one of them.
Yeah.
He
ended up getting to play right away. They won that. He didn't get to play right away, but he got to transfer, even though that was a school that was on the list that Dooley said he couldn't go to.
Yeah, because that used to be the thing. It was like, yeah, sure, you can transfer, but you can't transfer anywhere in this conference. And you can't transfer to any of the schools that were recruiting you when we were recruiting
you.
When
they put up the portal, they removed all of those restrictions. And now this would put them back
in. That's good. We can agree, right? That's a good thing.
You're either transferring or you're not. And again, I understand the objection of coaches that they don't want, they want to be able to say, hey, this school was recruiting him before he announced he was transferring. He can't go there. I understand coaches saying that. My point is, this is not the way to handle that. If you have proof that a school is contacting and recruiting one of your players, you turn them in and they get hammered. The coach, not the school, the coach gets hammered.
All that would have to happen is, it's kind of like when, remember Hugh Freeze was paying players, but you never found out about the players getting paid because they all went to Ole Miss. It wasn't until he paid a high school kid. I don't remember the sum of money. I think it was like, I mean, it was still thousands of dollars, but I think it was in the like $5,000 to $15,000 range. It wasn't crazy amount of money, but the kid didn't go to Ole Miss. He went to a different school, and then it was easy for him to be like,
it was not the only time that happened at Ole Miss, I can tell you that.
But like, how bad are you at cheating if you're paying kids thousands of dollars and they're not even coming to your school? Like, if they're, all that would have to happen would be some high profile players to be like, screenshot the phone call or the text message or something and send it or put it out there. That's like, hey bro, hey, I know I took my official visit with you and I know I'm not playing right now, but you know, I don't have any desire to go play at the University of Georgia. You know, like, stop calling me, click. Like, if that happened and then it was proven that that was happening, then you don't death penalty them, but you penalize them with,
you publicly shame the coach,
and you take away massive amounts of official visitors that they're able to have,
and that's where you do scholarships. You make the penalties directly tied to recruiting, because that's what you were doing. You don't forfeit games, you don't do anything like that, but you publicly shame the coach, fine him, suspend him for two or three games or whatever, but then make all the penalties related to what you can recruit with. Official visit days because on the road for coaches, your coaches.
Coaches wouldn't reach out to players illegally. Because think about it, in recruiting, it's a secondary violation if you call or text on, you know, during a time that you're not supposed to. But if it's just once and you're like, oh crap, I got the days mixed up, the rules change every year, those are reported as like not even secondary violations.
They're not called secondary violations anymore, but it's level three, I think, is what they're now called.
It's not a big deal. You know, it's kind of like, hey, you're not supposed to do that. Let's make sure your compliance guy has a documented meeting that you've gone over all the new rules now, and we'll move on, and you self-report those.
But this, I like your idea. Take away days on the road. For every one of these you make, you take away your entire staff's day on the road.
Yeah, 100%. Like, if you get caught calling a player, make it to where you can't recruit, you can't travel to that state to recruit.
Ooh.
You want to call a kid in Georgia to see if he can, a Georgia prospect or something else. You know what Tennessee staff would never do? Illegally call a kid from the state of Georgia.
Yeah.
Because that one kid isn't worth you getting a ban from recruiting kids down. Like, if they did something, you know, or like we talk about the numbers every year. We're talking with Callahan, where, you know, like, how many guys can we get? What's this going to be? Well, now they put the hard cap at 25. If you get caught illegally calling players that aren't transferring and you're trying to convince them to, every time you do that, you lose a scholarship.
I like that idea in principle, but I don't like the idea that you have, that's one less scholarship in college football that a kid's getting this year. Because I realize that kid gets it somewhere else. But the trickle-down effect is there's a kid that can't go to Charleston Southern on full scholarship because they don't have one.
Fair. So maybe that's not the
But I like the idea.
Conceptually, do something. All right, you know, if you get caught doing it, then you lose the ability to host official visitors on home games for the next season.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if you told a coach, if you do this, you do not get to host official visitors to your campus during the season for your football games for a whole season? They would go, if anyone on this staff is caught calling a player on another team, da da da, you are fired immediately.
Yeah.
That's all you have to do.
Yeah, the penalties have never been severe enough.
Yeah.
But make the penalty severe, and you don't need that transfer release line at all.
Yeah, because that gets muddy, and there definitely will be some pettiness or something that happens.
656-9900, if you want to join us talking transfers or Tennessee hoops. Big announcement in the NFL yesterday. We'll tell you what that is coming up next on FM 99.1, the Sports Animal.
Welcome back into the Eric Cain Show on the Sports Animal. Brian Rice, myself, EA, 656-9900 if you want to join us here.
All right, before we do anything else, it's that time.
Whoa.
It's that time right now. Caller number 5, 656-WINS, will receive 2 tickets to see the Foo Fighters.
The Foo what?
The Foo Fighters. Foo Caller Fighters. Number 5 right now. 656 wins. April 20th, Thompson Bowling Arena is where the concert will be. Tickets go on sale to the general public Friday. KnoxvilleTickets.com/Foo Fighters. It's going to be a great show, part of their van tour for the band's 25th anniversary. They're visiting the places that they visited in a van back in 1995.
656-9467.
It's good stuff. All right. We're talking.
Yes, I had to look that up because I did not know what the actual number was.
Talking on the transfer portal.
Does this help or hurt Tennessee?
I don't think it makes any difference.
I don't think it does either.
Rolls. It just means that you're not going to sit and wait an entire offseason to see if Aubrey Solomon's eligible.
Yeah, and that's awesome. And this wouldn't just be for football, correct?
Right. This is for all sports because right now you can transfer without penalty. In every sport other than football, men's and women's basketball, baseball, and hockey. Like, if you transfer in volleyball, as Tennessee had a player, Ava Bell, who transferred from North Carolina, she was eligible right away.
And there's never any doubt about it.
That's the rule.
I hate all the uncertainty. Like, you know why grad transfers are glorious? Because it's a grad transfer, and you just know that they can come and play. Like, how nice would it be to just know that if a kid's transferring, Cade Mays.
Okay? He's coming. He's playing.
Cade Mays is going to transfer, and he's going to play. You don't have to have a lawyer. You don't have to do all this other stuff. You don't have all the uncertainty and all the stress that is put on. Think about how stressful it is getting a football team ready to play or a basketball team ready to play when you have a transfer. Like, Euros would have been able to play day one.
Yeah.
Because he went to Arizona State, correct?
Yeah.
And redshirted and then came here.
Yep.
So you get to play day one. Like, I don't like all of the uncertainty with the underclassmen transferring.
Yeah.
So if this removes that, and there's, even if they have to have a transfer release, like, 95% of the time, I don't think that that's going to be a problem.
Right.
You know, we're talking about the coach, like, and the reason I asked about Tennessee is because I don't think this hurts Tennessee at all, because I think Jeremy Pruitt is an honest recruiter.
Yeah.
I think his kids, for the most part, know where they stand, which is why there's been some that have chose to transfer and enter the portal. But it's Ryan Johnson wasn't leaving as a grad transfer because he was uncertain of where he was at.
He left because he was certain of where he was at.
He knew exactly where he was at, and he's like a perfect student athlete, man. He played at a position, different positions. Like, I love his dad, Tyke, and Ryan, and that Johnson family, to me, will always be VFLs. Like, as hard as it was for me to watch Eli Wolf catch the ball for Georgia last year, he did everything in his power while he was here to be the best player he could be. He gave his all for Tennessee. He wasn't going to get on the field. Now, I have a hard time thinking that if he were here, he wouldn't have found a way to get on the field personally, because, I mean, I know Dominique Wood Anderson was good, and Austin Pope is a very underrated player, in my opinion. But those guys were different times, banged up throughout the year, and Eli Wolf would have definitely got on the field here this year.
Yeah.
But he knew that Georgia was losing everything.
Yeah.
And that was a smart move by him. He got more reps and more opportunity to play at Georgia than he would have at Tennessee this year.
Caught a couple of key touchdowns. He's going to have a chance to play in the NFL.
Caught a couple of balls. Yeah, first down ball. Game. I mean, he helped them win a couple games by catching the ball late in the fourth quarter. My point is, I like the transferring when it's clean like that, because Ryan Johnson and Eli Wolf were left this place in good academic standing.
They everything you asked them
never
to.
Got. Yeah, they're not getting arrested. They're not leaving under disciplinary reasons or anything else. They did everything they were asked to do the entire time they were here. And then they thought going into their last year, they had a better opportunity somewhere else. My point would be, I think it's going to take most people transferring, the ones that are doing it the right way. Most of them probably aren't leaving until their grad transfer year anyway.
Yeah, because most kids that are pushing the reset button now are going to push the reset button regardless, whether they think that they have a case or not. I don't think this significantly increases transfers. Maybe it does. Mark Richt's worried about that. He was talking on the ACC network yesterday. Well, they're going to jump the first time it gets hard. Well, they might, but they're going to go to another school and they're not going to be able to do it again.
If they're being recruited honestly, and you run a program where when kids come into your office and sit down, you tell them exactly where they're at and exactly what they need to do to get where they want to go, and you have a good program with stability, this isn't going to change anything.
Yeah.
If anything, it's just going to help you, because it's going to allow you to tell guys that maybe you misidentified in the recruiting process. You know, like, yeah, okay, so a kid's going to redshirt and he's going to handle it terrible. Well, if that's all the more mentally tough the kid is, do you really want him in your program anyway?
That's a kid that needs to learn a lesson in the offseason, and that's probably going to involve him going somewhere else.
And maybe you do. You know, like, would Nigel Warrior have if this rule existed after Pruitt's first year here, would he maybe have left? I don't know. He might have, honestly. He might have. And that might be an example of one where you go, you know, this... You know, he's forced to play through his, you know, through next year because he hadn't graduated yet and he didn't redshirt, and it ended up being the best thing that could have ever happened to the kid. But here's the thing. The reason Nigel Warrior never would have transferred is because he would have been talked to honestly and there was a plan for him. And again, the coaches that are running programs the right way aren't going to start losing players. It's the coaches that take over. Where this will hurt you is in a situation where you take a program over and... If it's a very different philosophy, you know, like if you go from, I joked in talking about the end of the Butch era, the country club era, you know, when Pruitt came in and I remember walking off the spring practice field and Daniel Batuli and Nigel Warrior were sitting there gassed and Batuli turned to Warrior and said, I told you this was no joke.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, whew, like you risk running some guys that don't want to be in a new situation, but I don't think that makes your program worse off. So this doesn't hurt Tennessee, and that's where Tennessee and then student athletes in general, I think this would be good for us, good for our current program, and I think with our staff, and I think it's a better thing for student athletes in general. So you won't hear any opposition from me.
Yeah. If you're doing it the right way, you have nothing to worry about. Something I say to a lot of people a lot of times.
Yeah, that applies often.
Yeah. We'll take your phone calls on this next. 656-9900. It's the Eric Haines Show on FM 99.1, The Sports Animal.
If you want to join Brian Rice and myself, EA, on the Eric Haines Show. We're brought to you by Mortgage Investors Group. That's MIGOnline.com.
656-9900, if you want to join us. Mark is up first, as we've been talking about the transfer portal. Mark, welcome in.
Hey, guys. I basically agree with all that what you've been talking about with the portal. I like your ideas about penalties as opposed to the release. But a worst-case scenario came to mind, and I wanted to throw this out there. So, say Tennessee has a coaching change. Now is every single player on the team eligible to transfer with no penalty wherever they want to go, because coaching changes happen?
Yeah, I think they are. But I think, from my experience, the penalty of having to sit out a year is not what has kept kids in the program. It's that they chose a place and there's everything else that's there. I think maybe you see another kid or two leave that wouldn't have before, but I just don't see, knowing college athletes like I did, I don't see everybody getting up and bailing on a program.
Well, Mark, I think I know where you're headed with this, and it's like, okay, let's say you're at Memphis and you've over recruited Memphis, or let's say you're at Minnesota and you've PJ Fleck recruited players better than they're used to getting, and you get a bigger Power Five job, or you go from Memphis to Florida State and you have 12 guys on your team at Memphis that you know you'd love to play for you at Florida State. You take that job, can those kids without penalty just transfer over to your program? The answer under this new thing would be yes, but even bad programs that are firing coaches that have to hire them, there's not 12 open spots on the 85-man scholarship roster. So you couldn't just leave. Now, could you leave and bring two or three or four with you? Absolutely, you could. That could for sure be a thing that that changes. But my comment to that would be, well, they went there to play for a certain coach, and they've had success, and they want to go follow him and go to a bigger school because they've had success. Well, that's exactly what the coach is doing. So why couldn't they go? It wouldn't screw the program though, because you couldn't take but more than a few guys because of the way the other rules are set up. It's not like Norvell could take 10 Memphis players over to Florida State because he can't go in there and tell 10 guys that they're no longer on scholarship.
Except for there's another recruiting class of 25 kids allowed the next year. So 10 of those 25 could be a transfer from your old school. But really, it's not so much the kids following the coach, but what about the Memphis that loses 10 kids to transfer and can only recruit 25 kids the next year? So they're going to be behind on their recruiting on their kids coming in for the next 2 or 3 years. There's going to be a trickle-down effect where Memphis has to catch up from losing 10 players.
And that could be, Mark, that's a great point. And that could be where the number one on the list where you have to receive a transfer release comes in. I mean, this could be a situation and maybe that was proposed that puts that on there, that wants it. Like, I wouldn't have a problem with Memphis in that situation saying, we're not granting you guys all a release to go to Florida State to follow the coach.
I think the better solution to that, though, is, and Mark, we appreciate it, I think the better solution to that is the NCAA is going to have to come up with something to address whether or not transfers are counting against your 25 initial counters. So they don't count against the recruiting class. That's a different 25 number, but they do count against the 25 scholarship players that you can bring to campus in a calendar year. I think there will be something that will address that, because what you saw this year was 85 kids in the portal that didn't have a landing spot because schools didn't have the scholarships to give them. So kids are going to have to know that they have a place to go as part of this as well. And maybe it'll work itself out, maybe it won't. But I think a program losing its head coach and then losing a bunch of players is something that could happen. But those kids also have to find a landing spot. And right now, other schools not being able to bring guys in means that you can't do that. There's not going to be a landing spot for them. So
that's we'll definitely a situation, though, that would require some special circumstances and rules addressed to it. So that's a good point, Mark.
Let's get Casey before I have to get out for this hour. Casey, welcome into the EA show.
Yeah, I got mixed feelings about it. I know these kids are highly competitive, and if they go somewhere and they can't start like Justin Fields and then transfer out to Ohio State, I mean, I know it worked out for him, but I think they're making it too easy for you to quit on your teammates.
I think my response to that would be, if you're in a job and the circumstances of your job change, you aren't beholden to stay in that job for the rest of your term. You can get up and leave and find somewhere that suits you better. Because I think a lot of these kids...
I agree about that point.
Circumstances have changed.
You always want better
yourself. And I think circumstances changing causes a lot of these things.
I will say this. You do run the risk of slightly furthering the desensitizing of the kids that get brought in every year. It's kind of, it's the free agency part of pro sports. You know, people follow players more than they follow teams. That's already happening a little bit in college football, to the point where, like, when kids commit to Tennessee, I by no stretch of the imagination throw the VFL card on them. I rarely can remember all the kids' numbers when they're true freshmen if they're not out there playing anyway. I don't think it ruins it for fans of teams that have been fans forever. I think that what it would do is it would put an emphasis on loving the players that are upperclassmen that have been there and been playing. It just makes you love Trey Smith even more. It doesn't make you hate Eli Wolf. It doesn't make you hate Ryan Johnson. You know, those guys, you know, but if you leave in the middle of the year, then yeah, you're going to have a hard time liking Jalen Hurd. He quit in the middle of the year. If you're a guy that plays for a few years and then transfers somewhere else, and again, no one is going to transfer when they're like, Trey Smith could be a grad transfer.
Yeah.
He's not going to, because he loves it here, because he's playing here. He's playing at a high level. He's getting better. He's getting developed, all that kind of stuff. It's only guys that are going to be leaving that are going to be leaving because they're not where they want to be on the field.
Yeah.
And if that happens, that's okay. That's an opportunity to bring another player in and do that. I mean, it just, I don't think that all the scenarios of what could happen are necessarily going to happen. I know that the what if kind of freaks people out a little bit, but I don't think that you'll see that.
Casey, we appreciate it. 656-9900, hour number 3 of the Eric Haines Show's next on the Sports Animal.